I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa. I was classified as a colored under the old apartheid racial classification system. I went to university in Durban, South Africa, and I practiced law at the Legal Resources Center in Johannesburg, which was the first public interest law firm in South Africa. And then I came to Columbia Law School, where I'd got a scholarship in 1983. And at that point, there was a very vigorous anti-apartheid movement in this country. And because I had been active as a student activist, I'd worked at Legal Aid in South Africa. I was at the Legal Resources Center. So I was very active and committed to social justice and ending apartheid. And I came to the United States with that background and became involved in the anti-apartheid movement.
What was it like studying law in the midst of a system of inequality?
I think the best word I could use is Kafkaesque. Studying was Kafkaesque. For example, we would study family law. In the old days, under the apartheid regime, there was a system called the migrant labor system in which black families essentially couldn't live together. So black men would move to the city for jobs, and the wives and children would remain in the rural areas. But we never, ever discussed this in family law. Criminal law. We would have courses on criminal law and really never engage with the way that apartheid criminalized racial identity. So there were a range of ways in which we studied a legal system that was underpinned by the British legal system and the Roman Dutch system. I had to study Latin because in order to get a LLB degree, you had to pass Latin. And so it felt like studying law in a European setting, but we were in the heart of Africa. So I think that there was a disconnect between what was happening in people's lives and how apartheid regulated injustice, and what we were what we were studying at the university. Remember as well that Nelson Mandela and Oliver Tambo and the great leaders of the ANC were all lawyers. But that history was definitely not part of what we studied in law school, even though there were a lot of people at the university who were committed to ending apartheid.
When did you become involved in anti-apartheid activism, and when did you become aware of Nelson Mandela?
I became aware of Nelson Mandela when I went to university. The security state was so much in place by the time I was growing up. Nelson Mandela was in prison. The ANC had been in exile. So there was a real sort of squashing of political dissent after Mandela went to prison. And for about a decade and a half, South Africa was certainly living in South Africa. It was a relatively stable country. And then when I, in high school, towards the end of my high school, when when the Black Consciousness Movement started becoming active and we became aware of, the possibilities of racial transformation, and there was a lot of protests and Soweto exploded and so on. So my political baptism, I should say, really occurred with the Black Consciousness Movement, Steve Biko. And it was only when I went to university that I really began to appreciate who Nelson Mandela was and what he represented. But there was, for a time, a real dissonance between the old guard, Mandela and Tambo, and the new black radicals like Stephen Biko and so on. It's almost to some extent, if one can analogize between Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, that generational difference. But in the end, of course, you know, South Africans were united in a struggle to end apartheid, and people united behind Nelson Mandela as truly the moral and political leader that he was. But people of my generation really, unless you were born into an ANC family and had connections with the movement, for a large part of the population, the ANC figures like Nelson Mandela were largely sort of mythological figures who were on Robben Island.
What has Nelson Mandela's work meant to South Africa from your distinct viewpoint? And what do you think his work has and his legacy has meant and will mean to the world going forward?
I think the first thing that when one thinks about Nelson Mandela, one thinks about law as a vehicle for change. Because Nelson Mandela was very clear about the rule of law, about constitutional change, and using the law to make a difference. So when you look at the constitution that South Africa adopted as the document for the new democratic South Africa, that is one of Nelson Mandela's most powerful legacies, the idea that legal revolutions really mean something. So in South Africa, there was a legal revolution. They didn't, you know, the military options were very limited. So I think rule of law, constitutional change, law as an effective method for transformation was very important. The second is I think that Nelson Mandela epitomized the idea that forgiveness is not only possible, but it's necessary. So the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is a feature of his, after his release from prison and what he wanted to start the new South Africa with, and then if you look at movies like Invictus, the way that Mandela really pushed this idea of forgiveness in a fundamental way. And I don't believe that South Africa could have gone from apartheid and the kinds of deprivation and the cruelty of apartheid to a democratic country without that bridge of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. The third legacy, I think, is that Nelson Mandela represents that concept Ubuntu. In South Africa, we have the term Ubuntu, which sort of literally means the idea of an interconnected humanity, that my humanity is connected to yours. So it's the idea of kindness and grace and being so human. Nelson Mandela always seemed to have a lot of fun. He had such a good nature. He had a way of getting people to listen to him, to listen to his message, even people who were loath to listen to him or were resistant to his message. I think that was a very profound quality of his. And I think finally he became the world's politician. People wanted to adopt Nelson Mandela as their role model. He represented so much, particularly for people of color. I think that he was seen as somebody who had the moral center that was absent for so long. The one thing that I must say is that that in all of this, there's so much mythologizing going on, and the narrative of Nelson Mandela, it's a wonderful narrative, and one celebrates this life. But I think people forget that he was first and foremost a freedom fighter. He believed very profoundly that injustice was not going to be tolerated, and he joined a military force. He was a freedom fighter, and they decided to take up arms. And that's why he was imprisoned. There were many, many reasons. But so this idea that Mandela really showed that it was even though he was a man of peace, that in order to get to peace, you really needed to challenge with everything that you have. So I think that Nelson Mandela, the freedom fighter who ended up in the dock and who gave that marvelous speech at the Rivonia trial, was somebody who had been pushed to the wall. And even though when he came out, of course, his lesson and his stature and his moral message is very important, that the earlier part of his life, I think, is also something that people sometimes forget. And then I also, what I admire about him and what I think his legacy represents is that he's fundamentally human. He had a first family, and then he had a second family, and of course his life was cruelly interrupted by his imprisonment. I mean, I'm not in any way trying to trivialize it or make it seem insignificant, but he was human in a way as a man who, left his family and so on, his first family, and he... So I think that legacy is also important. Today, we so want to ensure that our politicians are perfect in every way. And what Nelson Mandela was he was a perfect figure in many ways for the South African Revolution and what happened. But he also was a man with flaws, who had human flaws, and that combination makes him such an exceptional global figure.